Vamos então agora ouvir o Charles Hopkins, que é da Universidade de York, no Canadá, e que é neste momento o chair da Unesco, que está empenhado no virar da educação para o setor da sustentabilidade. E, portanto, vamos ouvi-lo. Thanks, Charles.
Thanks. almost good morning. I regret to tell you that my Portuguese comes with a very heavy English accent. It's such a pleasure to be back with you again. I spoke to you in Guarda. And it was such a memorable time. I had no idea the strength of the eco-school movement in Portugal. Often I speak with eco-schools in different parts of the world, but not only the size, but also the collaboration that you have with municipalities is very, very unique. And so when I come, I'm so grateful to the organizing committee for inviting me, because I come and I realize that this group is an important step in the really big picture. You see, the big picture at the moment is to try to move from the pressure on the individual teacher. You know, in most eco-schools, it's one or two teachers and a group or a club. So to move from that situation to not only a whole school approach, but to a whole community approach, and to move from the concept of trying to bring in environmental education to repurposing the world's education systems to address a more sustainable future. That was the original vision that we had in 1992. Well, it started in 1989 as we prepared for the Earth Summit in Rio. I was one of the 10 of the authors of Agenda 21, where we were trying to see what is the contribution of the world's education systems and the world's training systems to try and bring about a more sustainable future. I had been involved in the early 1970s as we were inventing environmental education. I was the head of the Canadian delegation at the international level as we were moving from outdoor education, which was education in the outdoors, to what we had envisioned as environmental education, as education for the out-of-doors. Simplistic thinking, but that's where we were. And we were full of hope, you know, in the early 1970s that finally environmental education would be there. And it's again at this point where we put our hope back on environmental education, but more. Okay. I don't know if you'll be able to see, but you know this picture of this little tiny dot in the cosmos called Earth, surrounded by all these issues. You know, you can see there's a little dot in there. That's Earth, and the issues that are around it. I was impressed at a conference at the end of the United Nations decade of education for sustainable development, you know, as it came to an end in 2015, I was talking with a minister of education from Newfoundland, and she was a former teacher that made it through to minister, or made it down to minister, maybe another way of looking at it. But she said, can you really be considered literate if you can't read the world? And there are many different ways of looking at the world. One is in its natural state on the left. Another, its geopolitical state with the flags and boundaries and everything put on it. The third one is a picture that represents a discussion I had in China with some senior physics students. They were talking about China's major role now in launching satellites. If you want a satellite put up, you go to China and they'll put it up for you. They're sort of the leaders now. And they were talking about the junk that is circles the Earth, the residue of broken up spaceships. There's thousands of pieces of particles floating around. And of course, they have to be taken into account. If you're going to launch something, you have to launch through this. Even a tiny speck will pierce a spaceship. And but the interesting part was these Chinese physics students were debating the morality of China polluting outer space. They said, we've already polluted China. What gives this generation the right to pollute outer space for future generations? And it's that kind of a thought on the larger scheme that really gives us hope. But they're complex issues. They really, really are. I think this is one of the ones that quite often I use when I'm talking in Europe. This is Lake Chad, which is one of the large, you know, Africa only has a handful of large lakes. And on the one side over here is Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and down here is Cameroon. It's right on the border of the four. And this is, Lake Chad is a large but shallow lake. On this side, this is Boko Haram territory. This is African Muslim herders. Okay, African Muslim herders. This side is Arab Muslim herders. Down here is African Christian farmers. Okay. Now, this is what happened to Lake Chad with climate change. And what each of these groups have turned on one another. Civil war, as you know what is going on with Boko Haram territory in this area. It's terrible with the killing of teachers, the killing of students, and so on. And so what ends up is this, as you're aware. Right? Now, one step further, I took this picture in northern Sweden. Now, is this an environmental issue? Is it a social issue? Is it an economic issue? No. They become very, very complex. And one ministry and the government can't handle it all. It's going to take concerted effort. But you know what controls what the government does? The people, the citizens in their country. Governments usually do not take enlightened action. You know, their goal is not good governance. The goal is staying in power. And so once again, it falls back into the role of the level of public understanding, public knowledge, their values, the ethics, and so on. And so, you know, whenever we get into a tough spot, we say the answer is education, right? And it falls back on teachers. But the huge global challenge is this one, you know, how do we actually come up with an economic system that will work for us? How do we do that? You know, is it capitalism or socialism? Is it communism? Is it dictatorship, enlightened dictatorship? You know, quite often we fall back on that, but that usually doesn't last very long. But we realize there is this great problem, and so the world has come together. It started in 1987 with the Brundtland Commission saying we have to come up with an overall worldview, and that worldview that they came up with was the concept of sustainable development. And in its simple complexity, development that meets the needs of the future generations without compromising current, or meets the needs of the current. Well, you see how I get turned around. I like the definition of an African elder, an indigenous elder, whose definition was this: enough, for all, forever. Enough? What is enough? It's a discussion you can have with students of any age, or your parents, your grandparents. What's enough? And it changes at different times in one's life, depending on your experience. And what does for all mean? My family? My town or city? My municipality? My country? Remember, it came from an indigenous elder. For all is not limited to humans. It's for all life. And again, it's a whole different perspective. And forever, bringing that intergenerational. And so they started from 87 working towards sustainable development, and in 92 was the first meeting when they adopted the sustainable development goals. When they adopted the Agenda 21, there were 40 targets. And they thought that's too many, so in 2000, they changed, and they came up with the Millennium Development Goals. That was too few, that was 9, and it was only aimed at a few countries. They realized now, with the Sustainable Development Goals, that something has happened. And so they realized that what they heard, this all began online as they come in now from 2015 to 2030 in this period. They asked the world online, the world we want was a huge campaign, and they ended up with about 1,000 goals, which were brought down to 100 goals. And then those hundreds were clumped together and put into these 17 goals. And I think you're all aware that education was realized as one of the goals, and a very, very important one of the goals. But if you were a university professor and someone came to you with this as a research, you would probably say, well, what is your definition of inclusive? What is your definition of quality? What is quality education? And you go. So it's extremely difficult to track, to measure. It's aspirational, though, and that's what many of the goals are. But the concept is not to think of the goals in isolation. Okay, the Ministry of Environment will do this, the Ministry of Agriculture will do that, Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Education, and so on. Now, you have to think of it as a patchwork quilt blanket. It only works if we're working on them all together. And we have to find ways of knitting them together. But it has been realized by the United Nations General Assembly that education is not just a standalone. Education is the key to implementing all the goals. You're not going to be able to implement them without public knowledge, public understanding of all of these, right? And so we have the goal of education with the 7 targets, I think you're all aware. And for most teachers, target 1, right? That's really what we're aiming at. And at the moment, we have isolated into target 4.7, we've isolated education for sustainable development, which encompasses and includes not only environmental education, but social justice, equity, citizenship, and so on, all of in its complexity. So if we look at 4.7, what is so different now is that never before in a global goal has the work that we have been pioneering been isolated and measured and put there. You don't see STEM, you know? You don't see language arts. You don't see history. But you see these two. The other ones are embedded in that first target. It's very, very different from anything that we've had. But then what we need to do is to try and figure out, okay, well, what really is ESD? And I can only give you what UNESCO, as a UNESCO chair, but I can give you some insight into this as one of the authors, the writers of this back in 90, 91, and finally adopted in 92. We said, first and foremost, if we're going to have any development at all, we have to have a knowledgeable public. We have to raise the education levels. In 92, the average education level of the world, grade 4. Grade 4. Yeah. We had roughly 150 million children in no schools. Nothing. And in those countries that were most in need of development. So the first goal was to get kids in school and to keep them there, not just the first 2 years until they learn to count and then fathers take their children out to work and that sort of thing. Okay? So the first goal was that. The second goal, though, was realizing it's our most educated countries that are leaving some of the deepest ecological footprints on the planet. So more education of what we currently valued in the north would be great for development, but terrible for sustainable development. And so the big thing that was different is that we said, what we need to do is not add sustainability education or, you know, that sort of thing. What we need to do is reorient the purpose of education itself from development to sustainable development. Now, people shook their head. How would you ever reorient in the world's education systems? But believe me, we're close to it. We are now having ministers of education around the world talking about what kind of an education do we really need? And bringing up the questions, why do we educate people? What is the purpose of education? Those are the profound questions that are now starting to be asked. Okay? The third one, though, was raising the public awareness and the understanding, because that is what guides our leaders, right? And it's our behavior. How do we act? When are we going to buy an electric car? But doing it in a knowledgeable way. And what we have to be so careful of is because we cannot see where we're going, we are moving by driving in the rear view mirror. We can't really envision a sustainable future, but we clearly see what is unsustainable in the past and what we need to change. So it's that uneasiness. So as educators, not indoctrinators, but as educators, we have to be careful. We have to question. We have to question the whole concept of sustainable development itself. That is how it will grow into something better. Because sustainable development is so human-centric. It's anthropocentric. It's all about humans and how well we're going to do. It doesn't have that broader concern for all life forms that is so needed. And so it becomes then a problem when people say, well, then what is education for sustainable development? And it first came out, the easy one in the 90s was sustainability education. But in the 90s, I was a school superintendent in the city of Toronto. I had just moved from superintendent of curriculum to the regional superintendent of schools. And when I was superintendent of curriculum, every 2 weeks, a group would come to me with a binder and say, just put this in the curriculum. It's really important. And the teachers in the system would be saying, tell them to go away. I'm focusing on my math and language, you know. And so there was this conflict. So the idea of how do schools react? How do we move forward? So we suggest that first and foremost, we do need the core curriculum. That's what gets timetabled, funded, tested, and so on. So we need to engage language, math, geography, history, those kinds of things. But they're not enough. The reason we have all of these, and they're very, very important, the reason we have them is because of the failure of the core curriculum to prepare people for the 21st century. It is an old discipline-oriented base. And we need to rethink our way forward. And be careful of a person with one answer, right? We need to tailor this into our school systems. But we do see that changes are happening. You know, we've been guided so far in the purpose of education by the Delors Report coming out of the EU. Remember in 1996, for the four big goals, to know, to do, to be, and to live together. But we're seeing that there are changes in all that, from knowing to be aware of what we don't know, which is extremely important, and from simply, you know, to do and to be engaged and so on. And the idea of living together, now we're forced into living together with the other. And who are the others? And to live together with others sustainably, how do we do that? And so UNESCO has taken upon itself to move beyond Delors and to reopen the question and engage the world again in the futures. It's interesting that it's plural. So this will be eventually the replacement for Delors. Something called the Futures of Education. It's open on the UNESCO website and as an association of eco schools in Portugal. Write. Give them thoughts. Give them ideas. It could be some sort of collective of work. But UNESCO is saying the world is changing, social media, all of the things that are going on. And as well as UNESCO, then there's the work group on the futures of teaching. And because of the situations in different parts of the world. So these are what is going on. Now, what we've learned, if we really want to move forward into sort of a whole school approach, is that we build on the strengths model. Now, what used to be was when I was superintendent of curriculum, my job was to reorient and change curriculum. And the model that I inherited was to go to the school at the end of the day, because the teachers will all be tired, right? Give them coffee and pizza, and then tell them that you have a new idea and you want them to do it. And basically, you were saying, what you've done for the last 20 years isn't very good, but I have an idea I'd like to share with you. And now we have a shared vision, and here's what I want you to do. And of course, it never went anywhere, except for those who wanted promotion, right? They'd always sit and listen. So what we want to do is to build on the strengths of individuals, right? And ask them, okay, what you're really good at, how could you think of using it in a way to build a more sustainable future? And it really doesn't matter. No one discipline owns either education for sustainable development or global citizenship education. The other one that that the world is ministers of education and come up with that are asking for. So the first one then is that it doesn't belong to anyone, everyone can do it, but you need to have a focal point within the school so where people can collaborate, can talk, organize, okay, which field trips do they really need in this particular community? What are they interested in? What are our teachers' strengths? What kind of extracurricular material is needed, and what do we have the strength to be able to do, etc. But what is happening, or never happened so much in the past, was the idea that senior administration would come to the rescue and resource it. That was so wonderful to hear what's happening in Madeira, of you know, bringing the teachers here and so on. This is the kind of thing that we really need. And as I say, it doesn't really matter. And any one of the disciplines, these could be ordered in any different way within the school. For instance, you can have the lead from science. And even bringing it down to simple things, like how much coal would it take to have a 100-watt light bulb on for an hour? You know, putting things in perspective. I can't envision the size of a ton of CO2. It's hard for me even to feel the weight. You know, there is so much that is complex for children. We talk about the blue planet. You know, 3/4 of the planet is water. No, it's not. 3/4 of the surface is covered by water. The Earth itself is smoother in perspective and scale, is smoother than an orange. It's hard to think of with the Himalayas, right? But on that size and perspective, if you were to take all of the water and put it into a bubble, be 860 miles across, you know, that sounds, wow, 860 miles high water, you know, but there, okay? So, and if when we think of geography, of ways of looking at things, we can talk about the ecological footprint, a new way of looking at maps that puts things in perspective. Or if we want to do it in arms export. Imports and death. So you have different ways in secondary school of getting into discussions and so on with the strengths of the different disciplines. STEM is such an important one. Everyone is talking about STEM because our countries need the technology as we race ahead of others. But what we're doing is calling for STEM with purpose, not just anything. But how can we use STEM to address the 17 Sustainable Development Goals? Right? Whether it's health, or it's technology, or poverty, how can we engage all of that? I love this one. You know, when the first bullet trains came in Japan, the nose was on this. But then they realized Japan, on some of the routes, goes through a lot of tunnels and the vibration of going through. And so then they redesigned the front of this one. It's based on the duck-billed platypus. That Australian mammal that can go through very shallow streams, but without leaving waves for predators to detect it. And so this design is much better going through tunnels. You don't get the shock waves that you get with this one. So it's the whole idea of learning on nature. other groups that really shift and become engaged with the arts. I love this one. This is a painting from my own collection. And what it is, we have a rash of condominiums in Toronto right now being built. We have more construction cranes in Toronto than there are in New York. It is just booming from immigration coming in. 55% of the people in Toronto were not born in Canada. It's huge. So we have these condominiums, and so the idea here is, and they're all glass. The insulation factor of one, maybe two panes of glass, two. And so the sun beating in, and the answer is to open up the fridge, put in a fan, and sit in front of it. And of course, the irony of that is that the amount of heat going out the back is probably 10 times the cool that is coming out the front, and the futility and so on of doing it. But again, the arts in so many ways do things. So how do we address this in our schools? Unfortunately, the first one at the bottom there is ignore it. That's in far too many schools. But in a couple of years, the target that all our countries are going to have to face is, to what extent is ESD embedded in schools and in teacher education, examinations, and so on? That's coming. They've just agreed to that. And so our school systems, probably most at senior administrator, have no idea of this. And what are we going to do? And we need to have you ready to be able to go to your local municipalities and so on and build on the experience that is within this room right now. So as we go up through schools, some of them have events and, you know, they have a club and so on. Others teach about sustainable development and things. But others then are changing and it's really embedding it in a whole system approach. So the whole school approach, so the operations, food systems, all of the rest, and then this next one of how do we embed this in community goals. This is a program that's now going on in 176 systems around the world called Regional Centers of Expertise in Education for Sustainable Development, and people are working on it. If anyone wants to talk to me more about it afterwards. Often school leaders have said, we'd like to do it, but we're focusing on our PISA score. As though working on this will hurt PISA. And the research has shown, I conducted research, I didn't do it, but I coordinated with colleagues in 18 of the high-scoring PISA countries, those school systems that had completely changed to embed sustainability in their delivery and what the exam and so on showed great improvement. It didn't hurt the high-performing at all. It enabled and rounded it all out. So now I'm working on, in 38 countries, can we use this approach of looking at local social, environmental, and economic issues, using that as the curriculum delivery method of improving the education of the world's indigenous youth. They are the ones who are the least well served by all of it. This is in Mongolia, and it was a school that had an environmental crisis, and so the teachers started writing their own textbooks and their own curriculum. They worked it out for that school, and they went from one of the lowest performing schools in the whole of Mongolia to number one school, and received all kinds of awards and so on. So where are we going now? Let me wrap up by saying, the youth movement that is out there, as teachers, how can we build on this to deliver literacy, deliver the skills, deliver the knowledge, so they're not just swept up with, you know, without facts, but give them the communication skills and ourselves adapt our systems to make it worthwhile. In Toronto, we had a right-wing government that said, well, if they're out of school, we don't pay the school their the tax money. If they're not there, we're not paying. And of course, we had to very quickly flip it around and said, no, they're on field trip. And embed it as an important part of the curriculum. The preparation of new teachers and so on. This is in China, and these were student teachers who there was a contest throughout a whole region of Hangzhou. I do a lot of work in China and Japan, in Hangzhou, and delivering lesson plans around the Sustainable Development Goals. And the winners all receive sustainable development soccer balls as well as the recognition. But that was what they wanted a lot more than the plaques or anything else. Yeah, I want one of the soccer balls, right? And so on. So anyhow, it has been, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being here, and I'll be around later on if any from the municipalities would like to talk to me about that concept of the regional center of expertise. I'd love to do that. The last time I was here in Braga, what struck me was the work you were doing around the sustainable handprint. Remember the whole idea of we have hands, our handprints can overcome our footprints. And I just wanted to close by saying, I hope I can remain as one of the hands in your collective handprints. Thank you very much.